So last week we talked to Jared and we got a whole bunch of statistics and numbers that weren't opinions, they were facts. And I said last week that I wanted to talk to some bar owners and restaurant owners or business owners this week to see what you guys thought about hearing about those numbers and what your situation is that you're going through in different places in the country.
I don't want to share someone else's thoughts. I want to create my own original thoughts. I want to create my own original solutions. I want to look at situations and come up with my own phrasing, my own words, and do it my way.
This is the John Taffer Podcast.
Shut it down.
I'm John Taffer, and I'm ready to rip my freaking eyes out. If I have to stay home for one more month, Corey, I don't know how the hell I'm going to deal with it. So I'm in my bus. This is now my third week in my bus, Corey, which is okay. I'm comfortable. I'm not complaining. You know, a lot of people don't have something like this, so I'm not at all complaining. But 3 weeks, I'm in Buford, Georgia. And welcome. I'm John Taffer. This is my podcast, and I'm excited to talk to you all today. So Taffer's Tavern is, 90, 95% construction is finished. I do my walkthrough, get the keys on Thursday. Pretty excited working with the franchisee. I see, Corey, you're wearing your new Taffer's Tavern hat. I must say, you look quite good in it too, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Does it feel good when you put that on?
Oh, yeah. I rock it everywhere.
Yeah, good. Yeah. You're like my moving billboard, buddy. Every week you got one of the things on. Mm-hmm. So Taffer's Tavern has been going great. We're really excited. Staffing has been great. And I'll tell you, Corey, these past few weeks, I've become such a fan of Georgia, Atlanta, and this area of the country. People are really good here, really good people. It's beautiful country. I'm on a Lake Lanier here in my bus and a campground here. And looking at the beautiful lake and the rolling hills and the green trees. And, you know, when you sit in a place like this, you get separated from the rest of the world and all the turmoil and the craziness that's going on out there right now with Supreme Court justices. And it's just getting deeper and deeper and deeper. I mean, you're not going to be able to wear boots to walk through this bullshit after a while. You're going to have to put on a whole freaking bodysuit to be able to, or a scuba suit to be able to work through it. It's getting so deep. But I'm sitting here. I am sipping. If you notice, Corey, I have my NHL New Amsterdam vodka cup in my hand.
Oh, nice.
So I do because I just finished my NHL show before we did the podcast. And I've had a lot of fun with this. A few weeks ago, the NHL called and said, John, you want to host a show for us online on our digital platforms? So I said, sure. So I'm doing a show sponsored by New Amsterdam Vodka called Pre-Gaming. And it's on the NHL networks. And it's been a blast. I've been interviewing Scotty Gomez, who's the first NHL player ever from Alaska, and Scotty Trottier, who's won 4 Stanley Cups. So it's been a blast. So I've been drinking these drinks every episode, Corey. I have to make another drink. So I've been using New Amsterdam vodka and my Taffer mixers. So today I made a Taffer Mule. So I use margarita mix, which has a little orange flavor in it, of course. New Amsterdam vodka, some ginger beer, topped it off with a squeeze of lime. And I got to tell you, I'm on my second one, buddy, and it's pretty good. I don't typically drink in the daytime. So this might be a happier than usual podcast. So last week was a really fascinating podcast. And, you know, I always find it interesting as one who does news shows all the time. And those of you who follow me know I do Fox and MSNBC. And I do a bunch of news shows and business news shows. I always do my homework, Corey. You know, if I know I'm going to be talking about McDonald's, for example, I'll pull the stock market report, the food. I'll get every piece of information I can on McDonald's. I am knowledgeable. I am good to go. And I find it interesting that all of these news shows, from CNN, every network, is talking about the doom and gloom of the restaurant industry and everything is failing. And then I'm on the phone talking to my buddy, Jared Isaacman, who's CEO of Shift4. And I'm saying, so how is the industry going? He goes, well, John, you know, New Jersey's tracking ahead of last year. Connecticut's tracking ahead of last year. And I said, wait a minute, what the hell is going on? I watch the news and I'm in this business and I know thousands of people in this business and I talk to as many people in this business as anyone. And I'm thinking, oh, this is terrible. And then I start to see, wow. So when New York City shut down, a lot of the business went to New Jersey and Connecticut because people weren't coming into the city anymore. So when we take a look at the restaurant industry, to say that the restaurant industry is doom and gloom and failure is an unfair statement. Quick service restaurants in many markets are doing pretty well. Drive-thrus, to-go restaurants, pizza restaurants who are designed for delivery are doing pretty well in some places. In a amount of places, they're way ahead of last year. So when we take a look at the restaurant industry, quick service restaurants are doing much better than full service restaurants. Luxury restaurants are the ones that are failing. Upscale restaurants are the ones that are struggling the most. So to say every restaurant is failing is unreasonable. So you can't say every restaurant is failing by restaurant category or restaurant type. Then let's take a look at the nation. Oh, the restaurant industry is in dire straits from coast to coast. No, not true. Jersey and Connecticut are two examples. Texas is starting to come back strongly. Georgia's numbers are starting to come back strongly. Florida's numbers are starting to come back strongly. So that's not a fair statement. So it was interesting to have that call with Ways and Means yesterday and to really pick this apart and doing my homework because I want to give good advice and good recommendations and realizing that stimulus money shouldn't go to a fast food restaurant in New Jersey, probably. Now, there might be exceptions, but that makes sense to me. So we have to determine who gets help and who doesn't. The other big problem is how restaurants have been categorized with bars, and I've mentioned this before. Restaurants can open, but bars can't. Restaurants can survive with less customers over more hours. Bars only have a few hours to get their customers, so it doesn't work that way. So there's real differences in this. And when people start to clump it together, resist it. Not every restaurant is failing. Not every restaurant is decimated. Not every state is failing. Not every state is decimated. So we need to target the stimulus money in ways that serve us as taxpayers. And I'll be candid, the proposal put forth by the Democratic side of this, and I'm not being political here, just being an evaluator, didn't run long enough, didn't separate who gets money and who doesn't, and it didn't address any of these issues. It was like somebody who had no knowledge of the industry wrote this damn thing. And it's not going to help anybody if the money shuts off at the end of the year and we don't do business till March. And the last stimulus money is gone and everybody's waiting and running out of money waiting for the next one. So we don't have time on our side. So, you know, I think it's important that we as consumers and as restaurant people and as Americans look at things on a factual basis. And my point is a lot of people haven't been as honest with us as they could be, and they're really generalizing the things that they're saying. I want to see money go to the bar industry. I want to see money go to the casual dining industry, to the sectors who've been hurt the most and the regions who have been hurt the most. And that's what needs to happen. And here's the problem. The problem is, putting politics aside, there are some states that have put in regulatory programs, New York is an example, that has decimated the industry in that state because they shut it down. North Carolina, we were just talking to Amanda, Corey, was another one, right? So they shut those states down. Because of the choice of those governors to shut those states down, I'm not saying it's a good or a bad choice. I'm just saying because of that choice, that state is now in more fiscal trouble than the states that didn't shut down. So is it fair for a government driven by one party, led by one party, to subsidize the choices made in states from an opposing party? I think it is, because I think people should be helped no matter what party they're affiliated with. So I think that's a bunch of bullshit. The problem is politics now gets in the way. One side ran the local, another side ran the national, the federal, and now they can't come together with any kind of meaningful dialogue. So that's what happens. And now politics has come in the middle of this. So personally, Corey, I can't wait till this election is over. I can't wait till these politics are over. I can't wait till the Supreme Court thing is over. And I just want everything to get over already. And the bummer is it just keeps going. Nothing ends, right? The unrest continues. The politics continue. The pandemic continues. The hurricanes continue. So what do we have right now? What's good? Well, we got football back. That's pretty cool. We got the Stanley Cup. That's pretty cool. We see a vaccine in our future. That's really cool. I mean, that's a big freaking deal. But we have each other. And one of two things happens these next couple months. And I really wish that this had happened the last couple of months, that we start to pull together and realize how challenged we are right now as a society, and the fact that we need each other more than ever before. We need Black people to come to restaurants owned by white people. We need white people to come to restaurants owned by Black people. We need people to support our communities, whether they're Black or white. We need people to go to our businesses, whether they're Black or white, whether we're Black or white. We have to somehow support our communities and each other. We somehow have to find a way to do that. And I think that the common denominator to do that are businesses. The businesses that people need to frequent and the businesses that people like us want to operate. So I'm hoping that over the next few weeks when this election ends, Corey, that whoever wins this election starts to unify us a little more. If it's Trump, this is his last election. He can't be reelected again. There's a reason to unify and stop fighting. If it's Biden, then Trump is gone. There's a reason to stop fighting. So either way, there's a reason to stop. So I always like to end this podcast on a positive note. You know, I was interviewed by Success Magazine this morning. And they said to me, you know, what is the one thing that you believe in more than anything else? And my answer to that question was people. You see, as a business owner, as a manager, all my success I've achieved through people. Corey, I'm making this podcast with you. You're the one who's going to edit it and put it together. You make me look good when you do that. I'm achieving this with and through you.
Yeah.
I get them. So all my success has come through and with other people. So I believe in other people. I believe in their ability to make me successful. I believe in their ability to make us successful. I believe in people. I want you to also. This is a time to really break this shit down, folks. Look in each other's eyes and realize brown eyes, blue eyes, green eyes, gray eyes. It doesn't matter. When we look in each other's eyes, a connection is made. That's when things start to happen. So I'm hoping that's what happens these next few weeks, Corey, as we start to pull out of these frickin' disasters that we're living on. So I'm John Taffer. Think about the things we've talked about in this podcast. You know, I think there's been a lot of positive discussions, business strategy discussions. Get ready for the relaunch. Get ready for a boomtown. I think there's an opportunity to really understand how important reconciliation and working together is now more than ever in our society, and also how important it is to vote and to make certain that you and your opinions are respected, as well as our members.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
So last week we talked to Jared and we got a whole bunch of statistics and numbers that weren't opinions, they were facts. And I said last week that I wanted to talk to some bar owners and restaurant owners or business owners this week to see what you guys thought about hearing about those numbers and what your situation is that you're going through in different places in the country. So this is always my favorite part of the show. We get to do it about every other week or so. Audience call-ins. So who do we got first, Corey?
All right, John, first up, we have Amanda from North Carolina, who's the owner of the Goat Bar and has been in business for over 17 years.
Hi, Amanda. John Taffer here.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm probably doing a little better than you are these days. So you're in North Carolina.
Yeah.
What part of the city are you in?
I'm sorry. Yeah, we're in North Carolina.
And what part of the state are you in?
In Raleigh.
Oh, you're in Raleigh.
The capital.
Yeah, I spent a good amount of time in Raleigh over the years. It's a great city. So you own a bar called the Goat Bar.
It was.
Yeah, I guess a lot of places can say that now. That's what sort of really stinks these days, Amanda. So you've owned the Goat Bar for 17 years with your husband?
Correct. And
wow,
until the shutdown, we had not been closed for one single day in 17 years.
Wow. So you are
now we've been closed.
You haven't closed for 17 years, and now you've been closed for how long?
6 months, 5 days.
Wow. So have you been mandated to be closed this entire time?
Yes. And the governor came out today, and we're still mandated shut.
Wow. So, you know, it's interesting when we were looking at what's happening in different states. Isn't it amazing, Amanda, that it's the same illness with the same situation in every state, but how different each state is treating it? Do you have food available in your bar?
No.
So a bar.
We're just quickly. Yep.
Yeah. Are restaurants allowed to be open now in your state?
restaurants are allowed to be opened, breweries are allowed to be open, the bars and the grocery stores are allowed to be open, restaurant bars are open, airport bars are open, hotel bars are open. Of the 7,000 ABC permits in the state, only 1,600 have been deemed still closed.
And why are you closed? Because you're an independent bar with no food? Is that why they categorized you as that?
Correct.
So it's interesting. So
If you are not a restaurant in the state of North Carolina, you are a private club if you serve liquor by the drink. And all the private clubs are deemed too dangerous.
Wow. So now you're behind, I'm guessing, behind in rent, behind in other expenses. The bills are stacking up every month, of course. And
We don't know. I mean, we luckily had savings, but our savings is done. This month, we're living off of the credit card because we have no other choice. And it's just to the point to where, you know, at what point do you walk away after 17 years?
Yeah. Well, after 17 years, I'm a pretty loyal customer base. I would guess after 17 years, you've got some pretty good longstanding customers, I would imagine. So the good news is when you do reopen, those customers should come back, I would think.
Maybe. Because what the problem is because everything is not shut down. So all of my customers are now going to the sports bar up the road and are sitting at their bar. They may or may not have to, they don't have to legally order food. So they're just gathering up at the local sports bar. And so now, 6 months later, now I've got to change their habits again.
Yeah. You know, it's remarkable, and this is not unlike things going on in other states, Amanda, whereby a restaurant that has a bar is allowed to bring customers in, but a bar that has food is not allowed to bring people in based upon how the liquor license is categorized. One example is Spirits on Bourbon Street in New Orleans fell into that category. They were a bar with food, so they weren't allowed to open. But if they were a restaurant with a bar, they were allowed to open. So that's a very, very loose definition. So what's happened is the bar industry has been treated differently than the restaurant industry, even though it has a bar. And it's inherently unfair. And I hear you. And what's going to happen, Amanda, is your customers are now getting in a habit of going to these other operations. So they're sitting in a hotel bar, they're sitting in a sports bar, they're sitting in another environment, and they're connecting with that environment. They're connecting with the employees, they're connecting with the customers there. And what happens is now the new operation is part of their traffic pattern. And you're right, you've got to start over again when you reopen. And that's a real challenge.
The restaurants here are acting as bars. They're stopping serving food at 10 o'clock and they're bringing in DJs and bands.
Yep. So this is what's happening in other states too. The restaurant is becoming a bar at 10 o'clock at night when they would normally close. They're now selling drinks. They're bringing bands in. They're doing karaoke. Some of them are even doing dancing, believe it or not. But you're right. So restaurants have taken the business away from bars because of this classification and the behavior within the restaurant. As far as people getting next to each other, wearing masks, not wearing masks, all that is exactly the same as it would have been in the bar. So it's completely unreasonable. Has anybody filed any lawsuits against the state of North Carolina? Do you know?
Well, we filed we weren't organized as a bar organization. And since this has happened, we've created a North Carolina Bar and Tavern Association. And we did actually sue the governor over the executive order because he's allowing breweries and all these other bars, you know, and it's just targeting 1,600 of the ABC licenses and the other, you know, 6,000 are still open.
Yeah.
But we lost in court. And I'm not really sure how. I mean, I have my suspicions, but there was no evidence, there was no precedent that they could state on why we lost. other than it, it's become so political, and that's the bottom line at this point. And
well, man, this is what you need to do with your husband. You need to sit down and you need to talk about the fact that when you do reopen, assuming you're going to, and I'm guessing for most people, and I was talking about this morning on a news show, I believe we start to really come back in March is when I think people really start to come back. I believe the vaccine will be circulated at that point. I think life will start to normalize. And yes, I believe the bar industry is going to come back. I believe that in time it's going to come back just like it used to be. And people will sit next to each other at bars, and sure, we'll have better sanitation standards, but the industry is going to come back. So the question becomes, you need to have the resources to open and launch a grand opening when everybody comes back. And that's the challenge. And if you waste or not waste, if you spend all your money now on rent and all of those things, and you have no resources in February and March to do a grand opening and reacquaint your business to the marketplace and draw new people in as well as some of the old ones, that's going to be your challenge. So the bars that do launch rather than open, the ones that create excitement when they open, those are the ones who are going to succeed in that new environment. So you can't open it like a bar that's been in business 17 years. You got to open it as if you're opening on day one. That's your challenge.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there are things you should go.
And, you know, it's difficult here.
There's some resources I just want to mention to you. The Nightclub and Bar Convention in Las Vegas is a great resource. You should consider that. You should also go to the National Restaurant Association website. There's great information at the Nightclub and Bar website. There's great information and links on my website, johntaffer.com. So you need to open with promotions in place and some marketing in place to assure that you'll be successful.
Right.
And Amanda, I wish you luck.
You know, at this, I appreciate it. At this point, it's literally going to be like starting over from 17 years ago and having to go and get a loan and, relaunch everything. Yeah. And I guess at that point, it comes back to, at this point in our lives, is this what we want to do? Start over.
I was just going to say that.
Because that's literally.
Well, 17 years ago, you were a different person than you are today, right? You had different priorities and different positions.
Absolutely. And I'm, and we're 17 years older. And, there's no guarantee that we're going to be successful the second time around.
No, there isn't. There isn't. But if this is what you know, and this is the industry, then you need to follow that heart of yours and determine what you're going to do. But one thing you don't want to do is open without any kind of a launch and just spend money as you fail. You have to open with some energy, Amanda. And that's what's really, really important.
Right.
But I got to run the next call, son. So I want to wish you the best of luck. And get in touch. Let us know in a few weeks after you open up how you're doing, okay? I'd love to talk to you again in a few weeks.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Take care, man. I wasn't going to talk about this, everybody, but I want to. I was going to try to keep this private, actually. But I received a phone call last week in the Ways and Means Committee, which is a committee in Washington that determines ways and means, the ways we're going to accomplish things and the means and creates the means to do it. I reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to speak with their committee, some representatives of their committee on the phone yesterday. So I did. And I took the call from the Ways and Means Committee, the Republican side of the committee. And of course, committees have two sides. There's two parties within every committee. And the Ways and Means Committee is a committee within Congress that again manages budgets and comes up with various tax incentives and programs like that and manages very much the fiscal programs of our government. And they called, and this was again a Republican side, and they wanted to talk about a lot of questions. And they told me how there was a proposal on the table from to them, the other side, that was going to provide some stimulus packages through the end of the year. And that I took exception with. And then I heard the way the stimulus package was going to go, and I took exception with it. But, the phone call was an hour long, And what I heard was I heard a bunch of people, I happened to be on the Republican side of the Ways and Means Committee, who are asking incredibly deep questions, really wanted to understand how to help our industry, and was in essence a pushing back on a program offered by the other side. And I'm not being political here. And what we talked about was the fact that one side of our government is trying to do a stimulus package where every restaurant gets money and everybody gets money until the end of the year. But we now know restaurants closed in the United Kingdom today, Corey. I don't know if you knew that. The United Kingdom closed all restaurants today.
I did not.
Numbers are going up in Europe. Numbers are going up in our states. So there probably, I hate to say this, but there's probably some closures in our future. And we're probably going to have some rough times ahead. So those closures, and if this is going to happen, then we're not going to really get a vaccine circulated till after the first of the year or so, then, you know, the industry is not going to come back by the end of the year, Corey. It's going to take some time. So I really believe that even though it doesn't match the fiscal year of our government, that any stimulus program should go through around March 15th, which will give us January, February to distribute vaccine. March is when I believe, you know, we'll have a surge in business and people want to come out and go out again. We talked about the fact that there was no inventory credit last time. So what happened was restaurants bought less food, bars bought less inventory, and how that affected distributors and how it affected farmers and various suppliers. And in my advice to them, that the stimulus package had to provide a credit for food purchases and beverage purchases, Corey. So you'd go out as an owner and you'd buy inventory. That'll feed the distributors, the manufacturers, the farmers, the whole supply side benefits from that. The next thing we should do is provide some payroll benefit to you, like we did last time, the PPP program. So that's the second element. The third element that we should do for everybody is provide some rent relief, because this pandemic has run an awful long time. It's now 6-7 months for people who haven't been able to create revenue. Obviously, some of you are behind on rent. And then the fourth element was to create some type of a model so that people who were still making money didn't get at federal money. And we talked about that last week, Corey, when Jared Isaacman was on. The fact that the state of New Jersey is ahead of last year. So maybe those people that are ahead of last year shouldn't get government money. But the people who are behind last year should get government money. So we want to make sure the federal dollars go where they should go. And last time they did this, all the embarrassment for the government was all the rich companies that got the money that shouldn't have gotten it. So there wasn't fallout from the people who did get the money, who should have. All the fallout was from people who got the money but shouldn't have, right? Big multi-million dollar corporations and such. So every restaurant and bar in America, every quarter files a quarterly sales tax return, Corey, which is based on my sales. So I know first quarter last year what I did in sales. It's on my quarterly sales tax return. And I know what I did this quarter. So I suggested to the Ways and Means Committee that they simply provide the loans to all businesses, just like they did last time. And at the end of the loan term, let's say the 15th of March, if your bar is tracking ahead of last year or within, let's say, 80% of last year or 20% of last year, that money that was given to you is now a loan and you pay it back at 1% over 5 years. But if your revenues compared to last year are below that 20% number, then that money is forgiven and you get to keep it. Now, it's a simple program. The quarterly tax returns are what they are. People can't really commit fraud with those. That's a very criminal tax fraud act to do. So it's a way to prevent the companies that are doing well from getting taxpayer money. It's a way to assure that the companies that need it are getting it. It feeds our inventory, it feeds our payroll, and it feeds our rent. And that was the program that I suggested. And I must tell you, Corey, I got off that call really encouraged. You know, this is the Republican side of the Ways and Means Committee really working to create a package that makes sense for the industry. And they weren't doing it based on what they thought the industry needed. They were really talking to people like me to find that out. And that's really encouraging. So hopefully those kinds of discussions will help Amanda and will impact all of us in every state as these relief programs come together. Hopefully they sit down at the table soon and get that done. So who's our next caller, Corey?
All right. So next up, we're going to jump into Tony, and he's from California.
Hello.
Tony, John Taffer here. How you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you doing, John?
Good, thanks. So you're in California. Where are you in California?
We're in Stockton, California, right in the middle of San Joaquin County.
Sure. Sure. We did some bar rescues in that area a few years ago. And right. Tony, you work or own Finnegan's Irish Pub and Bar and Restaurant?
I own.
You own it?
Yeah. And I own Finnegan's. Correct.
How many years have you owned it?
We opened that about 13 years ago.
Wow. So you've opened your business, you run it for 13 years, Tony, and now, of course, the state of California has required that you shut it down. And how long have you been closed?
We closed the day before St. Patrick's Day.
Day before, the second or third busiest day of the year. Can you imagine?
Exactly. It's actually the day we pay all of our permits and we pay all of our taxes. It's from that day.
Wow. So what's the news? How are the numbers doing there? And what is your prospect? What are you doing? So obviously the bills are piling up for you, right? You still got to pay rent. You still got to pay utilities, et cetera. So you've accumulated some debt over these past few months, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been closed. There was about 3 weeks they allowed us to reopen, and then they shut us back down. We've lost everything that was in refrigeration. We kept the gas and electric going because we thought it was only going to be a couple of weeks, maybe a month. So we kept the PG&E going, and every couple of weeks they tell us just three more weeks. And we never turned anything off. So in that time, we lost two of our freezers. The compressors gave up because there was nobody there to do maintenance. You know, the doors are closed.
Yeah. So, and today in the United Kingdom, all restaurants were closed. The numbers are going up in Europe. The lockdowns are starting again. We're starting to see increases across the states. So the biggest frustration of this is, if you knew, Tony, that you were going to be closed, let's say, till November 1st, you could have planned for that back when you closed in March, right? You could have planned, absolutely. You could have budgeted, you could have put a program in place. But when you think it's 3 weeks and then 3 weeks more and then 3 weeks more and then 3 weeks more, you keep spending money thinking that it ends in 3 weeks, but you run out of money pretty quickly, 3 weeks at a time.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I probably would have saved maybe $30,000 on PG&E. I probably would have shut off cable and all the other stuff that goes along with running a business and been able to save that money. Now, when we open up, we're going to open up, with a $50,000 debt. And the best case scenario is that we open up at 25% capacity. So, my best case scenario is that I make, one fourth of what I made at my busiest time.
Yeah. And that becomes a real challenge. Were you a business that was very busy on Friday and Saturday nights?
Right. Yes, absolutely. We're probably the busiest place in town, which was one of the reasons why, we had enough of a cushion to kind of roll for about 3 months. But after that, there's nothing left.
Yeah. So what are your plans?
Right now, I drive by the empty building every day. We try to run off the people that are setting up tents out front, folks that are in a worse position than me, trying to live on our patio area, just to try and keep the place as clean as I can. If they let us open soon, I might be able to recover, but a lot of my staff has gone on to jobs outside of the industry.
Yeah.
So if we open up, not only are we opening up with a debt, I've got this ramp up period where I have to hire a whole new staff.
And
there's training. So
I say this on Bar Rescue, Tony, your employees get to walk away and go someplace else, but you're stuck. You don't get to do that. So that's a real challenge. But California has certain laws and things in effect that make it more difficult. And people around America don't often know what some of these laws are. For example, the free speech laws in California allow people to panhandle at the front door of your business, correct, Tony?
Correct.
And years ago, I used to run the Hollywood Palace, which is a very famous venue on the corner of Hollywood and Vine. And I ran it for many years. And what would happen is when shows would end, And we had a couple of thousand people coming back out the front door. The panhandlers would stand right on the property line and would hit our people for money. They could sleep on the sidewalk in front. And the laws were so loose in California that they'd live on your patio. They'd pitch a tent and, you know, right by the front door of your business. They'd panhandle at the front door of your business. They could scare customers at your front business. When you add that to the kind of regulatory restrictions that are upon you now, do you ever think that you're in a uniquely unfriendly business environment in California? Have you ever said that to yourself?
Yeah, if there was, if I wasn't in my hometown and I was so attached, the building that I'm in is where my parents used to go after work together. Where we opened our business is where I used to sneak in and buy cigarettes out of a vending machine. I have a lot of emotional attachment to where I am. So I never hesitated on investing in my city. But you're right. You know, if it weren't for me literally standing in my parking lot and chasing these people away, they're allowed to live on our front doorstep. And as much as my heart breaks for the situation that these people are in, I have to be able to feed my kids too. I have to be able to provide employment to these people that count on me so that they can feed their kids. And it's, you know, I'm fighting both directions.
It puts forth the biggest challenge that we have as a society. And is the rights of that one individual who can sleep at your front door have the right to cause your employees to lose their jobs, cause your family to lose income? Where does one's rights end when they start to negatively impact someone else? And that's always been the challenge out there, is finding that line. And certainly those regulations in California aren't moving in the right direction. They're moving in the wrong direction. I'm guessing there's more and more of that going on every day, I would think, Tony, right?
Yeah, our issues have tripled with the people that are living on the streets in the last couple of years. Yeah. And we were already really kind of well known for this situation. And, you know, I volunteer my time for groups that go out and do outreach and try to help folks, you know, better their situation. It's hard for me to go up to these people and tell them, hey, I really need you to pack up your stuff, you know, move to someplace else so that I can get open for business. So that, you know, and I've got human feces that I got to clean up and urine and empty condoms and all kinds of crazy stuff that I clean up on the regular basis. Just so that I can open my doors and have, you know, families come in, because we're a restaurant, but I can't serve outside because I'd be fighting these people every day. And in order to, you know, feed my own kids, I have to, you know, I had to pick up some contract work so that I'm working, so I have money coming in so that I can pay my own mortgage, keep the lights on, feed my kids. So I can't be there all the time to make this a habitable environment.
So this is the dilemma that so many business owners are in today. And this isn't a political show, and I'm not trying to go there, Tony, but it's an interesting conversation that we're having. So if you support some of these activist organizations that are around us, and I won't mention names, there's no reason to, Tony, and they destroy the businesses around you, is that okay to support those causes when they're the stimulus or the catalyst to create these kinds of activities? And as a business owner, look at a guy like Tony. Look at you, Tony. You're a good guy. You don't want these people to lose their homes. You feel terrible. You work in outreach programs and try to help them. But when they pack their tent or pitch their tent at your front door, you're now the bad guy if you tell them to leave. And it's a real catch-22 for business owners today. Are we bad guys for protecting our business and the livelihoods of our family when some type of an activist organization or some type of a homeless person or somebody who's less fortunate than us is impeding the business, therefore impeding the employment of our employees and the well-being of our family? It's a really tough challenge, Tony. And you're stuck, buddy.
You're stuck. I mean, we do the best we can with what we have, you know, to work within the confinements of, you know, the situation that the government has placed us in. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, my heart goes out to them, but there's other ways that we can solve these problems to where what people don't understand is business like mine, when you bring up the activists and stuff like that, businesses like mine are the ones that generate the tax revenue that funds the programs that they're fighting for. So if they're running us out, who's going to pay for the stuff that they want?
Also, you're the ones who are investing in the communities that they're trying to help. So when people stop investing,
we're painting the walls and cleaning the sidewalks.
The employment base falls apart and the whole thing goes to hell. But, you know, when we talk about COVID a lot on these past few weeks, of course, Tony, it's unavoidable in this podcast. But, you know, we've also talked how Hurricane Laura and the tropical storm last week affected Texas, how the fires are affecting California. We're not just dealing with COVID. In many places, your state in particular with the fires, it's crisis on top of crisis on top of crisis. So I can't imagine that you'd be in a worse environment than you are right now, between the fires, the homeless situation, the political situation, and the shutdown.
It's interesting you bring that up. I actually sit on a couple of city boards, and we get reports on the work that our fire department does. And our fire department is incredibly overworked. And they're handling maybe three times the number of calls that they would normally handle because of the encampment fires that happen in a lot of the places where these tent cities have popped up. They catch on fire, so they're constantly being put out. So our city's already fighting, you know, the chemical fires that come from these encampment fires that get out of control. And then you tack on, you know, the mountains around us being on fire. And it's just, we have to stay inside. So there's no point in serving food outside. But that was the only option for a lot of the restaurants in our town, is you either serve outside or you don't serve at all.
I didn't even think about that, Tony. So you've lost your inside service. Now with the fires, you've lost outside service too. Unbelievable. Well, let me tell you this, buddy. I really think that the vaccine will be distributed, and I'm on the board of a hospital. I get pretty good information. Will be distributed by February. And I think by March, things will start to normalize again. Unfortunately for you, that's a year, March to March, that you would have had to deal with this. But I think there's going to be a boomtown in front of us in March. I really believe once people get that vaccine, Tony, the next thing they're going to want to do is go out and normalize their lives in bars, in restaurants, in theaters, in venues. I think there's going to be a huge quest to do this. And clearly some competitive bars in your area of Stockton are going to close. So I present this thought to you. There's going to be a business surge in March, and there's going to be a lot less bars and restaurants seating available when that happens. And that's boomtown. So with less capacity and a surge in business in March, you could face a wonderful opportunity then, if you can position your business to exploit it in March. And I wanted to leave you with that thought. Now, it's been a year. You got to reopen, buddy. You got to have a reopening plan. You got to get noticed. You got to open with some marketing and promotion and things like that, of course. But I really believe in March, you're going to have a lot of customers and a lot less bars to go to. And that could be a really positive situation for the ones who survive. So think about your plan.
Well, I hope I'm on that side.
Excuse me, Tony?
I said, I hope I'm on that side, on that survival side.
I hope you are too, buddy. Anyway, you know, talk to landlord, work out some plans and some notes, get some deferments, do everything you can and see some light at the end of the tunnel. It's still a few months away, but I believe it's definitely there, Tony.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
So, you know, I think there's a message in every podcast, and this ending message is that, you know, and people say this stuff all the time, but man, it can't be words. We got to figure out how to get along right now more than ever before. And we're running out of time, Corey. Next week, I got my buddy Phil Wills here with us. I love Phil Wills, one of the greatest mixologists in the country. You've seen him do a bunch of bar rescues with me. He's here in Atlanta with me, and we're working on Taffer's Tavern. Phil's developed a beverage program with me for Taffer's Tavern. So Phil's been traveling all over the country doing his thing. So I want to get some insight from him, not only on what's going on, but on where we're going, cocktail trends, beverage trends. We might even make a cocktail together while we're on this podcast next week. So stay positive, everybody. It is getting better. Every day that goes by, we're one day closer to the end of these crises, whether they're fires, floods, hurricane winds, or a pandemic. Together, we win. Talk to you next week.
Subscribe to the John Tapper Podcast right now for more episodes every Thursday.